once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode, second hour, of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And today is Saturday, May 10th, and if it is Saturday, May 10th where you are, then we're live, and you can call in and ask us questions or make comments about anything that has to do with economics, the national economy, the world economy, or your investments or whatever. 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400. There was something I was going to remind you to talk about.
What was it?
I can't remember.
That's why I wanted you to remind. Oh, yeah. There's like, you know, we're hiring about 100 and some thousand. You know, we got a big boost in April because of
288,000 people.
But we're averaging around 170,000 a month, right? There are 800,000 job openings in the United States posted.
Yep.
Do you get that, folks? We have 800, roughly, listed with, and these are the ones that are listed with unemployment agencies, or like the Texas Workforce Commission.
Right, which is an unemployment agency.
Well, they're not technically. They used to be the Texas Unemployment Commission.
Right.
And somebody figured out, we're not here to create unemployment, are
we're
we?
We're making employment, aren't we?
But the point is that there's a powerful lesson to be learned there.
Oh, there's a reasons behind that, too.
If you have any influence over people who are getting educated for the purpose of actually having a job, there are hosts of areas in our economy where employers are willing to pay a lot of money if they could just find somebody who was qualified to fill the job.
Well, let me give you the other side of that. Most of those positions are filled within 45 days. That's 800,000+ people. Well, if you think about it, if you're adding 170,000 jobs, but yet 800,000+ jobs are filled every 45 days, how do those numbers work out? Well, because some of those jobs are being filled with people that are in other jobs that decide to leave that job and go to the other one and never have a moment of unemployment.
Well, now, there's some deeper meaning to that.
Yeah.
I'm ready to talk about that one, too. Have you heard about that? There was another thing that jumped upward. It's nowhere near as high as it was before the recession, and that is the quitting rate.
Yeah.
And oddly enough, for those of you who don't geek out over economics,
which is most of them, I think.
I think they should rename it as Geekonomics.
Yes, they hear us talking and they go, man, I'm glad somebody cares about all that silliness.
But one of the signs that the economic state of the United States, whichever one that is, maybe it's Texas, is growing, that our economic well-being is growing, is the quitting rate. The more people who quit their jobs,
right,
the better the economy is, because people don't quit their jobs unless they think they can get a better one.
Right.
And we are seeing, again, we are certainly not caught up to where we were before. The hiring rate, for example, the potential employment force that's being hired, averaging over 3 months, is about 3.4% right now.
Yeah.
And we have a slightly lower rate quitting.
Which is why more jobs are being made than being taken away.
But, and it's starting to creep back up again. So, you mentioned that England is technically out of recession and we don't feel like we are.
They don't feel like they are either. It's just the size of their economy is now bigger than it used to be. It doesn't mean that they feel like they're out of recession. Their employment issue is worse than ours. And you mentioned this just a moment ago, and I'm going to give another shout out to the people that are going through graduation ceremonies today, because it's happening all over the country, that people are finishing their education. They're getting a rolled up piece of paper with a little ribbon on it, and they're wearing funny clothes. they're standing up and they're saying, I'm ready to go out and do something in the workforce that I wasn't qualified to do yesterday.
Right. And unfortunately, they're wearing a robe that represents a medieval workers.
Oh, yes. The Workers Guild.
And
In Venice, no less. And this is a Venice outfit.
Critically,
you can go to Italy and wear that outfit and wander around.
Well, critically, many of them are properly trained for a medieval job.
Right, of course. So, but the concept, you just said it. If you know someone that is about to go into an educational program or is in one, talk to them about what they're studying. Because there is this long-held belief about certain jobs that's generally wrong.
It's wrong?
Yeah, it was right when it started being held, and now it's wrong. And then here's an example. Nursing. People can get a job in nursing. This is the long-held belief. You know, there's always more demand for nursing. Right now, there isn't. Nursing jobs are not difficult to fill. If a hospital says, we would like to hire a nurse, that job is taken in a day.
There is an exception to that.
Right. Well, there's a lot of exceptions to everything. What is the exception?
For instance, in New Mexico, where nursing pay is abysmally low.
Right.
There are lots of nursing jobs open.
Right. Well, okay. No nurses want to go to a place where they're going to get paid a lot less.
And get charged a lot of income taxes.
Right. They would much rather go to a place where they have to wait in line to get a job, but when they do get the job, they get paid more. So, but that long-held belief that there's always going to be nursing jobs, well, society, our economic model, that is all of us together, has been saying that for long enough that a lot of people going to school went to nursing school. At the same time that there have been some caps put on how much money can be earned in nursing.
It's called the corn hog cycle.
It is. This is what happens. People see an inefficiency. They all get together and say, look, it's really inefficient. If we just do this, we'll make money. Well, when everyone does it, it's no longer inefficient. Mm-hmm. It gets inefficient in the opposite direction. So what we're saying is that if you know someone that's going to school, that is about to go to school or is in school, and they're trying to learn a profession, tell them not necessarily to learn the profession, but learn the tools that allow them to learn professions. Because
profession is probably...
Profession may not be the right word.
Occupation. Yeah.
Learn the tools that make switching occupations easier. Because if you think back 20 years to the occupations that existed, and we were talking about the Dow Jones Industrial Average and how many stocks or how many companies are still in it that were there 30 years ago. Well, consider that an occupation is the same sort of thing. 30 years ago, the concept of General Motors and Chrysler going into bankruptcy would have been laughable. People would have thought you were definitely on some kind of controlled substance. But we've been through it, and now we look back and say, of course they did. They were managing everything poorly. They were paying too much for their retirees. They had all these inefficiencies in their business. And it was based on decisions that were made 30 years ago. If you build your education, or the people that you care about build their education, around the concept of flexibility, around the concept of what do I need to know what I need to know, rather than I'm going to learn one thing and that's going to last me forever. Learning how to learn is very important. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and it's double whammy. It's difficult. What's difficult? Well, we got a caller here. Let's go to the caller.
That's a difficult concept, a caller.
So we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yeah, long-time listener. Over the past few years, you've gone through various, financial cycles and, history repeats itself. And one of the last things in the financial I'll call it a meltdown scenario, you always say is, countries go to war. With the global economy the way it is and the power of, controlling a country's finances like they're doing in Russia now, do you ever see a point where, you know, we have the big world wars like we used to have?
Yes.
I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks for the call. Yes.
As a matter of fact, we may be on the cusp of one right now.
Anytime people say that we will never have a great war again has been the cusp of when we've had a great war.
And historically, right around 2007, no, around 2010, actually, we were scheduled, just based on the rhythm of history, for a depression. And we actually got one a couple of years. We got the start of one.
Great recession.
And it was a really good job of heading off that issue.
We didn't have the depression. We headed it off. We had a really painful
period.
We had a
mild depression.
But if you just real quick, let me give a real quick
definition
here. If we think about what the long-lasting impact of the recession was, we have some areas in the country that look like a war zone, but they're relatively few. Detroit is the greatest example. You look at Detroit, and they're bulldozing houses because there's not enough people to live there. A depression is that magnified across the entire country.
No, you got the wrong definition.
There's a lot of I like your definition. This one is going to make me smile, so go ahead.
A recession is when your next-door neighbor loses his job.
Depression is
when you lose yours.
Right. That's
so
great.
Since most of the people around here didn't lose their jobs, we obviously just had a recession.
Right. Historically, we were supposed to have a depression.
But they did have a depression in other places.
Correct.
Okay, and this is something that, as a historian and a sociologist, I'm going to watch this one carefully. It's been one of the issues of socioeconomic theory is that we have these depressions that are caused by excesses, collapses of institutions. Well, we had a lot of that.
Yeah.
We have normally the fiscal and financial people will react in the wrong direction to make it worse. It's a series of things we go through. So we wind up with about 30% unemployment. We wind up with the Great Depression, in other words. And the way we come out of it is some places get hit harder than others. And the ones that get hit the hardest elect somebody who becomes a dictator and they'll start a war.
Yep. That's what happened when we were talking about World War II. It's what happened. Basically, if you go back to the Civil War.
Right. This is just this cycle of history. Now, we dodged the bullet on the Depression. But we, in America, may not have had a Depression.
Other people did.
Spain is still in a Depression. Spain has 30% unemployment.
Look at Africa.
Well, okay.
The entire continent is, besides just the very
extreme... Well, but they've always been in a Depression.
Tips. Well, yeah, but there's been stability... When the rest of the world has good economics, there's a lot of stability. And right now, you've got basically the whole middle part of Africa is at war, and most of the north part of Africa is at war, and most of the west part of Africa is at war, and most of the east part of Africa is at war.
It's going to get a lot worse because the Chinese who've been pumping money into Africa
aren't going to pump it anymore.
Have said those were some bad deals.
Yeah.
Anyway, let me go back to Europe for a moment. Russia is not out of the recession.
Sure not. Absolutely not. And they're making it worse right now.
And they have, if you look at unemployment in Russia, we've just kind of gotten used to unemployment in Russia being 40%. Because it's been that way a long time.
Yeah.
And the Russian economy is in a depression. And when...
And it's getting worse.
When nations that are used to having totalitarian governments to begin with, go into a depression and can't figure out how to get out, they very commonly elect a really, really strong man, and they gradually give that strong man more and more power until the guy figures out. And by the way, elections are coming up again, and it's a very good solution short term, by the way. If you have a nation that cannot crawl out of the depression recession hole,
let's invade another country.
Go grab the assets of your next door neighbor.
And this is key here. At that point, the rest of the world says, oh, you're bad. We're going to stop trading with you. The country that's now invaded another country, who's now not able to trade with other countries, has a group to blame for their financial misfortunes. We're putting sanctions on Russia. Russia can use those sanctions as, see, we are being attacked by an outside force, which will cause the nation to unify behind this strongman.
I want to tell you something that's fascinating, though. We had a higher level of trade with Russia last month than we have had at any point in our history. We increased the quantity of trade with Russia. Now, they're selling us, by the way, raw materials and fertilizer mainly.
Right.
We're actually buying more from them than they're buying from us. We're selling them manufactured goods. But there's a fact. It would put Europe back into a recession.
Probably a depression.
And maybe tip them over into a depression if serious economic sanctions were put on Russia. Now,
correct.
Why is that important? It means there won't be serious economic sanctions put on Russia.
It would hurt Europe too badly to do it, so they're going to let, probably tomorrow is the referendum for Eastern Ukraine, whether or not it becomes part of Russia. If that happens...
And by the way, do you know who's running the elections in Eastern Ukraine?
Saddam Hussein.
Pretty close. The separatists have printed the ballots.
Well, they get to count the votes, too.
You got it.
It makes it for a very fair election.
I'm joking. This is a joke. I don't know this is a fact. But they've already got them all pre-printed. There's only one. You only have one choice, and it's already checked for you.
Right. And, when the monitors show up to monitor the election and they get taken hostage.
Which is just what happened, right?
Yeah. Well, you can tell it's going to be a very fair and impartial election.
The point is that World War One is different from World War Two.
Is different from the Civil War.
But we lump them together. We lump World War One and World War Two together. They're version one, version two of the same thing. They weren't.
They were not.
World War Two was a reaction to World War One, but World War One was started under start. It was started. Nobody started it. It just kind of happened. And it was very similar to what we're going through now. And it came out of an economic crisis and the aftermath of the economic crisis. Now this is an interesting thing. 2 cents worth. I don't know that this timeline is absolutely accurate. This has not been studied because you can't study until it's happened several times. But there was a financial collapse in the United States in 2007. There was a panic in the market. It was a banking crisis in 1907.
Right.
That was such a perfect, the one we had that began in 2007, we didn't know it was beginning.
Yeah.
It was 2008 and 9. Actually, it was 2008 when the big banking crisis hit. So the 2008 financial crisis in the United States.
It was a repeat of 1907.
It's an almost perfect repeat of the crisis of 1907. That crisis was the beginning of a chain of events that resulted in World War One. Now, we didn't have a depression in 1907 because Teddy Roosevelt was the president. And he was a progressive, and he did something extra legal, which is he bailed out the banks with excess money from the Treasury.
Right.
Amazingly, we did the same thing this time. Now, it gets interesting. The people who actually cranked up the war in World War One were hit between the eyes and with this crisis, they were effectively the emerging markets, third world countries of Europe. They couldn't crawl out of depression. And in the interest of democracy means I've got to get elected,
absolutely,
which means I need to improve the economy And when you can't figure out how to, one easy way to improve the economy is just to hire a bunch of people and put uniforms on them.
Right. Absolutely.
But that costs a lot of money. And if you don't have the money to do it with, how do you get the money?
Russia's doing it.
Right. You go next door and take your neighbor's money. And that, if, because of the delicate financial situation that was in place following 1907, the concept of breaking off trade with these countries that were starting a war was so alien. The corporations and the lords of finance and the lords of business.
And the actual lords.
And it said, don't do it. Do not, under any circumstances, interrupt our trade or we'll go back into a recession.
Sounds familiar.
Does this sound at all familiar? So, you know, hopefully, just as Ben Bernanke read his history, I don't know if John Kerry took a history course.
I don't know that he did. Actually, I don't think he may have written some.
But if you look at the fact that it was World War One started in 1914? 15, 16. When did it start? It ended in 1919, I think. But when did it actually start getting cranked up? You're looking that up.
Yeah, I'm looking it up.
Because his...
The Grand Duke was assassinated.
When?
The Archduke, I'm sorry. And it was 1914. You were
okay.
Correct.
Folks, it's 19...
Ended in 1918.
Okay. Our crisis started 1 year later, 101 years, right?
Right.
Hang on to this. If history is repeating itself...
We're set for it.
Then next year will be the beginning of World War I-A.
Yeah. And if you...
We could call it World War I, second edition.
There are some differences.
World War 1.2.
There are differences that made it easier to stop the original World War I, were that all of the people in charge of the countries were from the same family. That doesn't exist today. Mm-hmm. They haven't known each other since they were children.
Well,
some of them really don't like each other.
You get these family feuds, though. You know?
Right, right. Anyway, we got a caller.
Okay.
On 773-1400.
You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi. I'm actually wondering if you're able to maybe put something on the radio for Chad Palm. He's having a benefit out at Honeycutt today.
We're on the air right now.
Are y'all not able to do that?
No, no. You just told us. You were talking on the air.
I'm just having a really hard time hearing you. So let me step. I didn't realize I would get through. I'm sorry.
You are actually on the air talking to everybody that's listening to KTEM.
Oh, how embarrassing.
No, don't be embarrassed. It's if you have something to say, say it.
I'm not embarrassed, and I talk all the time.
So we're having a benefit for Chad Palm at Honeycutt's off of Airport Road in Temple, and we would love everybody in the community to come out. We're having a fish fry. We have some live music.
Okay,
live auction.
Yeah, you said you're having a benefit for the benefit of someone, but I don't know who the someone is.
The someone is Chad Palm.
Chad Palm.
Okay.
Yes. And we would love for anyone and everyone to come out and support him. He was diagnosed with leukemia and lymphomic, basically a cancer of the lymph nodes.
Right.
Okay.
So please, everyone come on out and support a really good cause.
All right.
All right. Thanks for the call.
All right.
Thank you very much for calling.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, that was an interruption of World War I, but it was for a good cause. So.
Yes. Well, you know, I think that that's much better than having World War I.
Right.
Yeah, and so keep your eyes open, folks. If we are repeating history... And it's you slide everything back 1 year instead of it being 1914, as you said he was assassinated in 1914.
Right.
It'd be 2015.
Yeah, if we take another piece here, where I just said that Hanovers were the family that was across Europe and that we don't have that.
The House of Hanover.
The House of Hanover.
Yes.
We don't have a house that's holding all of Europe together at this point, but we do have a concept that is holding all of Europe together, and it moved at about the same rate as the Hanovers interbreeding across Europe. the concept of the union, the concept of the cooperation between states and
right.
the easing of borders and all of that is exactly the same concept that led to the ruling families interbreeding, intermarrying. They thought if our rulers are together, we're less likely to go to war. And this actually began with the concepts, the problems that happened in the early 1600s
right.
when we had huge war that lasted for 30 years across, talk about World War, across all of Europe and most of the rest of the world for that
it
matter,
was just,
too.
It wasn't just for 30 years.
Right.
It
was only 30 years. No big deal. Only 30 years war.
And it only reduced the population of Central Europe by 80%.
Right. And the rest of the world was not in happy-go-lucky days at that point either.
Right.
If you look all over the rest of the, I mean, North and South America was being decimated by smallpox and by, you know, Spain was taking over South America. And if you go to Asia, there were massive wars taking place there. It was a world war. That really should be World War I. It's just not cohesive. You couldn't say these two people,
right.
these two groups were fighting each other. And if you look at World War I, you can't really say that either.
There is an interesting, if you've ever, and I have read, the Guns of August.
Right. It's an excellent book.
And if you read any of the, and I have, of the books about how World War I started, it really boiled down to this. The communications systems used by the newspapers and the military were much faster than the communication systems used by the diplomats.
Yeah.
So that the newspapers would report, they had the telegraph and the telephone by this time. The newspapers were reporting things.
And causing the people to be really upset.
Causing people to get upset before the diplomats could address the issue and the politicians could then say, here's what we're doing about this.
Right.
It used to be, prior to that, the diplomats and the politicians got the information first, so by the time the news got out, the diplomats and the politicians could have already worked up a solution. And
it's the same thing's happening today.
There's an example that just went on. General, I'm going to mess up his name, Genseki. I probably just messed up his name, I'm sorry. He is the Secretary of Veterans Affairs. And there was a report on CNN, I think it was CNN, that 40 veterans had died while waiting to receive medical treatment in the in a VA clinic.
I think you had it right.
In Genseki. Tucson. Genseki. I said Genseki. Genseki. I should know that. Okay. Now, CNN also said, and there's been other reports, that there are these secret waiting lists and there's a public waiting list. The numbers that are reported on the regular waiting list, basically if you know somebody, you get on the real waiting list. There's a secret waiting list. You apply, but you don't know anybody, and they don't report that you're on the list, and other people are getting bumped in front of you. And there's all kinds of scandal associated with this. Now, it's entirely possible that CNN has got this all out of whack.
They usually do when you talk about the first breaking news story. You just
right.
think about the sniper stories or whatever. The CNN will come out and say, this is what's
right.
going on. And no, there was only, but there were 19 people. No, there were 12
General
five.
General Genseki did not make a public statement on this until over a week after the report. Now, I don't know General Genseki personally. I know of him from people who do know him. He's famous for not saying anything until he's got the facts. But the news media is out there.
Not famous for being quiet until they have the facts.
And you're going to appreciate this.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember Verna Jones?
Yes.
She was on the radio yesterday on NPR. She is the spokesperson for the American Legion.
Oh, that's great.
She used to work for us, by
yeah,
the way.
Yeah.
And she was calling for the resignation of General Genseki. Now, she's not personally demanding his resignation. Don't misunderstand that. That is, the American Legion is officially demanding his resignation, as are members of Congress. And the problem was he didn't react fast enough before he had the information he needed to make a judgment. He didn't, you know, and it is a bureaucratic issue that here's a guy who wants to be careful, who wants to say the right thing, and doesn't realize, George W. Bush had the same problem, by the way, doesn't realize you get out there and say something immediately, otherwise the news media will be ahead of you. Like, for instance, when George W. Bush, when the hurricane hit, Katrina, he appeared insensitive. Fact is, he didn't have enough data to take action or make a statement, but he didn't have the understanding of the environment, the communication environment that we're in today, to even when you can't have no idea what you're going to do, you get out there, you get into the middle of it, and you say, this is terrible, we're going to investigate this, we're going to fix it.
Right.
And it's a generational issue. Now we have a president, by the way, who had to take his cell phone away from him, whereas George W. Bush didn't know how to use a cell phone. And so what we have is a situation where the speed of communication via Twitter, via Facebook, via the blogs that are becoming the most popular newspapers, is so much faster than the diplomats.
This is great.
That it cascades into action being demanded by the people before anybody even knows what the facts are.
Right. And if you take it to another direction, when the Russian-Ukrainian invasion, the first one, and it looks like there might be a second one coming up tomorrow.
No, I think there's one already underway.
Right. When it was going on, the diplomats in Europe said, we're going to get together and we're going to come up with a response to this. So everybody, plan your flights. We're going to meet 3 days from now, and we will have a unified response that will surely cause the Russians to stop and take notice. Well, during that 3 days, Ukraine fell.
Ukraine or Crimea?
Crimea. I'm part of
You're
Ukraine.
Making the same yes. mistake that the guy did Goodness. This morning on the Wall Street Journal.
Well, basically, Crimea fell, and Ukraine could fall at the same speed that Crimea fell. So the diplomats are all together. Well, they're not quite together yet. They're trying to figure out how their plans are, you know, cancel my Monday morning golf rounds. I'm going to be going to Brussels for a bit.
Yeah, and that's the way they're doing it.
Clear my schedule. We're going to go have a speak about this. We're going to figure out some way of talking to Russia very strongly. And Russia's not listening. And when we say, okay, we're going to give sanctions, which, I mean, otherwise you've got a bunch of people that just canceled their whole schedule. They're going to lose face if they can't do something to stop it. Oh, well, we're going to sanction you. Well, now that's usable by the Russian government as saying the people of the world do not believe that we have the right to come out of depression. They are pushing us back. They are taking
right.
our hard-earned money.
And by the way, there was something that I'm astonished was not carried widely. Samantha Power, the UN ambassador that the Republicans love to hate, was interviewed on CNN in their they have videos that they put. I'm not CNN. Wall Street Journal. She had a very interesting. She said something so profound. This is an ambassador, so she said something that effectively is the position of the United States. She said, "The separatists who are holding the buildings in eastern Ukraine are all dressed in identical clothing, carrying identical weapons." Wearing identical boots.
I've addressed this already. They shop at the same place.
But she said that.
Uh-huh.
And their statements all across eastern Ukraine are perfectly coordinated. She said, I don't think there's any reasonable way of saying anything other than these are Russian soldiers. Now, when this is the ambassador of the United Nations.
Right.
Who just said Russia is already in
It's already
eastern
happened.
Ukraine.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
it's the same thing they did in
but
Crimea.
It didn't get picked up by anybody. It's and there's a real serious issue here, and that is, how many jobs are we willing to lose? How much money are we willing to lose
to prevent it from happening?
To stop an invasion, stop World War One? And the answer is, we aren't.
Yeah, and if
collectively the American people and the Germans and everybody else are just not willing to lose a lot of money on this.
We have a president that was elected with a platform of getting us out of war, not a president that was elected with the platform of defending the Ukrainian people. And that says something very clearly.
Do you remember Wilson?
Yeah.
President Wilson was elected on the platform of keeping us out of the European war.
Correct. Well, I mean, the concepts that we're talking about.
So was
about
Franklin Delano Roosevelt,
right. Well,
though.
Yeah, the people that react strongest to acts of war perpetrated against us are generally people that love peace. If we look at Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, there is absolutely nothing as violent and scary as a pacifist who finally gets, who finally gets really, really angry.
Right. If you...
Because he throws off, or she throws off all constraints.
Yes, there are no rules because we were trying to follow them and you didn't.
And we're going to kick you...
really, really hard in places that are generally not considered good places to
kick you. And we will firebomb your cities and we will do whatever.
Yeah.
There is no... And this is... We're... Folks, you're in history, and this will be, at least to me, objectively, not subjectively, very fascinating to watch. But we've got to do some commercials.
Yes, we do.
So watch what's going on, and if next year the Archduke Ferdinand gets assassinated.
Yes, if the heir to one of the empires of Europe gets assassinated, then
or something like that, you
right.
know. And really, we are in the Balkans in a position where one little thing could tip it over.
Yeah, if Serbia and Bosnia go back to war in a year, this could be the big tipping point.
Say the least, it's fascinating. So, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and we've got some commercials to play for dear old KTEM, and we'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. Listen. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And we only have about 10 minutes left in the program today.
Well, we talked
Saturday, May 10th.
Yeah, we talked about the war that has happened in history and that could happen again.
It's really going to be fascinating, at least for me, the next couple of years.
How do we act? How do
we
respond?
Watch what happens because, those who do not remember the past are condemned to repeat it. George Santayana said that, and it is so true. And unfortunately, we don't teach history very well, and I think sometimes neither does anybody else.
Yeah, I think in Europe, if you want to replace Archduke Ferdinand with a diplomat from the UN or a diplomat from the European Union, going to visit someplace, then I think that you're talking about a very similar experience. If we see Bosnia and Serbia going back, or Croatia going back to what it was, there are some massive differences today. And I realize that we're talking about war at this point. Their massive differences are the nations with which we have treaties. And most of Europe has
treaties.
Yeah, and
that was one of the problems that created World War One is that they had treaties that if these little nations went to war, the big nations were obligated to come in. And we have that right now. We have tiny little nations sitting on the edge of Russia.
Part of NATO.
That are part of NATO. And I get them mixed up. The little nations that are setting up on the Baltic Sea, Lithuania,
Hungary,
There's three of them up there, and I can't remember what they are. I should be able to remember what they are, and I'm sorry. But I don't remember if all three of them are now members of NATO, but I know at least one of them is. And again, my fact that I have lungs full of viruses right now are precluding my brain working at full speed. But in one of those nations...
Albania, Bulgaria.
Yeah, Albania is the one I'm thinking of.
Croatia.
Albania has about 30 or 40% of its population are Russians who have dual citizenship.
Yeah.
Who speak Russian and who feel very, very oppressed because the Albanians were oppressed by the Russians and they basically handed it back to the Russians and have been showing blatant discrimination against the Russians that are living there, that have houses there, that are citizens, whose children have grown up there.
And they're surrounding Belarus, who basically has the same kind of agreement with Russia that NATO has with the rest of NATO.
And then you have this little piece of Russia that a lot of people are not at all familiar with that's out there on the other side. It's an isolated little piece of Russia.
Stretches all the way around.
And there are NATO nations
all the way around it
that exist between main Russia and this little, what's it called? What's the name of the little, you got your computer.
Yeah, I'll
up there.
Pull it up here.
There's a little enclave sitting on the ocean. It's a port. And it is got some land around it. And it is actually part of Russia. But it is not attached to Russia. And you've got these little nations there that are now members of NATO. And we are obligated, the United States of America is obligated to go to war with Russia if it invades one of those nations. And those little nations who hate Russia with a passion because they were conquered in World War II and Russia stomped on them until the Soviet Union fell.
It's right there between Lithuania and Poland.
And it's got a name, and I can't remember. It's anyway, but the point is, if they were to react to Russia, for example, by cutting off the transportation routes between this little enclave of Russia and the main part of Russia, and Russia invaded them to get to the rest of Russia, the United States is obligated, as is every other NATO country, to declare war on Russia. Does this scary? Yes.
Now, what do we do personally in our investment world? I mean, that's what we're covering here. It's called Kaliningrad.
Kaliningrad, that's it. Fascinating.
Tiny little place between
Is it
Lithuania.
Kalinin or Kaliningrad?
Kaliningrad.
Kaliningrad. It's not, doesn't have anything to do with linen.
No,
I don't think.
No.
But the point is that there's a tinderbox sitting right where the tinderbox was with fuel piled up all around it going into World War I. Now, how do we handle that from an investment point of view? We are careful. We continue to invest. We continue to keep some powder dry. We recognize that if a war starts, there will be a sudden dip in the market, and it won't make any difference where you have your money. You're going to get a dip if it's in a long-term investment, so we keep some money in short-term.
If you have money in short-term and that dip happens, it's a great buying opportunity. I mean, who thinks that, worst-case scenario, the United States is gone. The whole world is gone. Well, money doesn't matter anymore. Okay? Next worst case.
We don't matter anymore.
It won't matter how your investments did. That's kind
that
of extreme.
Definitely a worst case environment.
That's an extreme case, but it's on the realm of possibility.
But we wouldn't be on the air next week if that happened.
No, in that case, you wouldn't be able to call us up and say, you told me I should go. No, see, so that's an all bets off scenario. Okay, next case, Russia cannot sustain a war with the rest of the world. It just can't do it. How much damage will they do, and who's going to be least damaged if they go to war with Europe? We are probably going to be in a place like what we were after World War II,
actually,
which is the powerhouse of the world again.
If Russia were convinced that we would not intervene...
Oh, they'd go right now. They'd be in the middle of...
They could sustain a war because they would be grabbing
things
to sustain the war with.
Yeah, Putin would be giving his World War II inaugural address, the next anniversary of the end of World War II, he would be giving in Berlin.
Oh, yeah. And this is, how do we invest? You got to remember something here. And again, we'll go to World War II, not World War I, as an example here. John Templeton was a trader on the New York Stock Exchange of no great significance as 1938 opened up. He died a billionaire and the founder of the Templeton Funds many years later, obviously. How did he get really, really wealthy? In 1938, when Germany invaded Poland, which would be the equivalent of what we just mentioned, he, for the only time in his life, borrowed money. He borrowed $10,000. And he used that $10,000 to go buy 100 shares each of stock on the New York Stock Exchange, 100 shares per issue of the lowest price shares on the exchange, without any consideration of how healthy the companies were.
Yeah, he just said it's going to do better than it is today.
And he became a billionaire, ultimately. So if this happens, and something is going to happen within the next 2 years, I am not certain, I can't be certain about the future, something is going to happen in the next 2 years to cause a market panic.
Yeah, that I'm pretty sure of. There's going to be a panic. How much the panic affects us is...
Yeah, have some dry powder. Don't necessarily buy into the market, but have 1 or 2 years, if you're taking income from the portfolio, have 1 or 2 years of short-term bonds or cash or something like that worth of income available to you. And recognize that when the market takes its nosedive, that is the prelude to a bull market that'll make your eyeballs quiver, which is a heck of a bull market. Yeah. We're about out of time.
Yeah, so if you'd like to contact us off the air, we have voicemail waiting locally at
947-1111.
You can also reach that voicemail toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 1-800-914-PLAN. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com. There's a contact us button there, or you can email us directly at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. And the Personal Wealth Coach also has podcasts. So if you did not get your fill of insanity, please take your medications while listening, because otherwise we are not going to be liable for your lack of sanity thereafter. But that is at thepersonalwealthcoach.com. Thank you for listening. And hopefully next week we'll come back with less snotty lungs and more fun stuff to talk about.
Take care.
Until next week, this has been the Personal Wealth Coach.
Truth. It's not just a word on your Fox News station. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM. Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.